Our theme tonight is batten down the hatches because the geopolitical and financial storms are rising. Senator Rand Paul wrote a great piece called It's Time for New American Foreign Policy. In part, this is connected to his reaction to the announcement of the proposal that Pompeo move over as Secretary of State. And they move up a career CIA covert operator who's been deputy up into the CIA, DCIA spot. Anyway, I put the full article in my notes. It's also linked in Geopolitics in the under News Trends and Stories in the website, so you can find it there as well. Again, Senator Rand Paul, It's Time for New American Foreign Policy. And basically what he's saying is he's rejecting the neocon strategy. And of course, every day Trump looks more and more now like he's building a war cabinet and falling into the what I call the neocon nightmare. Part of what is going on is you have, coming out of the fiscal crisis and the financial coup d'etat, you had massive financial liquidity kept going with very aggressive monetary policy, the quantitative easings plus rising debt, particularly in the emerging markets. If you go back and look at our planet debt study that we did in 2016, we talk all about that. But now with tremendous debt loads and rising interest rates, which of course make that debt much more expensive or untenable, you have trade wars going on and war as people fight over cash flows and credit and resources. And the combination is a dangerous cocktail. And of course, you throw the neocons in the middle of it, and it really gets bad. It's all like a scene from the movie The International. If you haven't seen that, it was one of the first movies we ever reviewed in Let's Go to the Movies, because I think it's such a great commentary on global debt and war and our financial addiction to global debt and war. But if you haven't seen The International, it's very informative about what's going on. Anyway, but what you've got is you've got a fight for cash flow, a fight for turf. And as interest rates rise and banks have to compete for deposits, there's a squeeze. And among other things, it's a squeeze on government budgets. And the more they've taken out debt, the more they need dollars to pay their debt, the worse the squeeze gets. And it's one of the reasons that the administration and Congress made such a push to repatriate as much cash. They're trying to bring the blood back to the brain and the lungs and get it out of the what is for them the fingers and the toes. Anyway, competition is turning nasty. We have trade wars. Of course, the president announced tariffs on steel and aluminum and then sort of accepted a whole bunch of people from it, basically Canada being the big one. China now produces almost 50% of the global steel capacity. The U.S. has dropped tremendously. But in fact, if you know, the issue that Trump said is it's national security, basically said if you have no steel, you have no country. And the question, of course, is, you know, if the economics that are currently happening keep going, will we have the capacity we need? But he's certainly talking like a man who's putting together his war plan and war cabinet. There's a threat that the president's going to announce tariffs or penalties on China for intellectual property theft. We saw the president of the, Tom Donahue, president of the Chamber of Commerce, basically coming out today and saying that, please don't do that. Of course, Europe is struggling with the impact of the tariffs and sort of Trump's, what can I say, sort of bombastic way of doing things. And of course, they got hit. They're going to get hit hard by the repatriation and the drop in the tax rates. Anyway, as I said, interest rates have been rising. Now, we saw the fixed income market sort of perk up and do a little bit better this week, but LIBOR continues to go up. And in the notes, I put the LIBOR rates. And what you can see is relative to a year ago, 3 to 6 month LIBOR is up about 100 basis points. Now, remember, I've always said stock market can digest 150 basis points a year in increases, but you get more than that, you start to get things iffy. Now, what's interesting is on the long end, the 20-year bond index has come down a little bit. The Fannie Mae's up a little bit, so the mortgage rates are higher. But as we see this week, the rise in Treasury interest rates backed off a little bit. I think part of the reason you have the sort of saber rattling is, of course, saber rattling means more arms sales for everybody. But this week we really turned out to make the Russians the boogeyman. There's tremendous effort between allegations regarding a poisoning of an ex-Russian spy in Britain, with Britain taking the lead on putting more sanctions, and now Mueller subpoenaing the Trump Organization over questions with Russia. If you're gonna get Trump on doing business with the Russians, you're gonna do it at the Trump Organization, not during the campaign, is what I think. And then finally, you have the Treasury putting sanctions on and sort of mouthing the interference in the election. And if you look at what the Brits are saying, if you look at what we're saying, it's so weak. It's almost embarrassing. And of course, this is coming right before the March 18th elections for president. So Putin is running, and with a 80 to 90% approval rating, he's expected to win. But you notice we're talking about the Putin boogeyman. We're not talking about the fact that $21 trillion is missing from the federal government, and our pension funds are financing with treasury bonds and buying the treasury bonds that are financing that $21 trillion that's disappearing. We're not talking about that. We're talking about the Putin boogeyman. And I think one of the things that's creating the problem with Russia is we do need a boogeyman, because you basically have a national security state which is not economic. It makes money by doing things that cause a negative return on investment, and it's hungry and it keeps eating its way around the planet. We also have a flow problem. The Bretton Woods system that grew up after, or that was designed by the US and implemented and policed by the US after World War II, really was power through managing the flows. And now, with the build out of the Silk Road and China trying to assert dominance in the South China Sea, you really, and the yuan petrol trade coming out this month, you really have major, major competition for flow. Major competition, and that's why there's been such a fight to assert hegemony on the Silk Road, and of course Iran is smack middle in the middle of all of that, it's one of the reasons Iran is very much on the map. And all, of course, that flow is all the trade flow, whether it's the South China Sea, the sea lanes, or the Silk Road, is all part of who controls the global reserve currency. And it may be one of the reasons the Anglo-American alliance is acting so weird. And then finally, there's a model problem. So China and Russia are threatening the flow problem, but they're also threatening the model problem, which is we now see Russia exporting more food than weapons. Weapons was there, they were always the number two exporter of weapons after the United States, who's the global leader. Now they're really beefing up their food industry. I'm going to talk a lot more with Farrell about it during the news trends and stories discussion during the wrap up. But that GMO model, which is not, I would say, is not big yet, but if it grows, it could threaten. You have pushback against GMOs globally, and if Russia really adopts it and promotes it could threaten big pharma. It could threaten many different things. It threatens the whole model. So Putin's messing with the model. And finally, if you look at what he's announced on all these weapons, I have no idea what the Russians are planning in terms of exports. But if they start exporting those weapons, they could turn into the number one weapons manufacturer if they good as good as they say they are. So whether it's food or weapons or the fundamental model, big, big problem. Now, as I said, Russian sanctions laid on this week by Treasury and the Brits. The Brits threw out 23 Russian diplomats, even after May said that the poisoning was likely the Russian. She didn't even have the gumption to lie and say it was definitely the Russians, because in fact you couldn't prove it. And if you look at what the Russians came back with in terms of what the procedures are when you're accused of something like this, of course, the Brits aren't following it. So it really does look sort of cooked up and made up. I should know Wilkerson will be on at the end of the month, so I'm looking forward to talking with him about this. and what's really going on. You know, nobody's more critical of the neocon strategy than Wilkerson, unless it's Saker. And of course, Saker will be on, on again in a month and a half. So I'm looking forward to that. The big Financial Times headline tonight, NATO powers close ranks against Putin, saying that Paris and Berlin are joining with the Trump sanctions and UK to blame Russia. In the meantime, Russia's trying to issue 7 billion in euro bonds. So this is coming right when they're trying to access $7 billion. I'm sure it's not a coincidence. And of course, the Russian elections are March 18th. So this is they're running a real, imagine doing this to, I mean, you know, we're all complaining that the Russians interfering in our elections. For everybody to pile on, do this, you know, 2 days before the Russian elections, that's a major interference in the Russian elections. there is also a split. I don't know how much this is contributing tension in OPEC. Iran's wanting to keep the price at 60. Saudi Arabia's trying to get it up at 70. So more cash flow tension there. And of course, we just saw, as I talked about last week, Xi Jinping did get the term limits lifted. So he's the leader of China indefinitely. We're back to indefinite terms. So we have a new, I don't know what you want to call him, a new Mao, so to speak, running China, which gives China tremendous stability in central leadership, which is going to be potentially a tremendous strategic advantage in this kind of environment. But one of the things the National Congress also announced was their military budget up 8%. So as we can see, you know, the commitment to war spending is going up around the globe. And when you throw space in, it's really going up. So the question is, the Anglo-American alliance losing control of the flows on the Silk Road in the South China Sea and in the financial markets, and that threatens the model and particularly the reserve currency. And so, how aggressive will they get? And of course, with the neocons right in there in Israel wanting to, as part of this, go to war with Iran, it's a very dangerous situation. Now, what you see happening, and this is contributing to the sense of batten down the hatches and the insecurity, is real turnover in the Trump administration. We've had 24 departures in 420 days, and I do believe that's a record. As I discussed last week, Cohen was out. Interestingly enough, the Wall Street Journal then informed Blankfein. Remember, Cohen and Blankfein, if you go back and read my old posts on Goldman Sachs, Goldman Whack-A-Mole, and a couple of others related to that, Cohen and Blankfein came up together. They're basically tied at the hip. So Cohen resigns from the White House, and then the Wall Street Journal informs, announces that Blankfein is leaving by the end of the year, and then Blankfein confesses that he read about it in the Wall Street Journal. He didn't know he was leaving. So what you're seeing with Blankfein and Cohen out is the engineers, the traders who engineered the financial coup d'etat and the housing bubble from Wall Street, and that is really the end of an era. And they're bringing in a relationship banker. So traders out, relationship bankers in. If there's any message that the financial coup is over, there it is. Quite astonishing. But of course, the big out this week was Tillerson out, handled exceptionally poorly. One of his deputies, who then got fired, implied that Tillerson learned it from a tweet. It has looked to me like the neocons have been after Tillerson from the time he arrived in town. And there's no doubt that Tillerson and Mattis were a force pushing back against the neocon strategy in many different respects. You know, they persuaded him to stay in the Iran deal. They convinced him to support NATO. And in fact, if you Craig Murray has been writing some great articles. Murray is the former British ambassador to Uzbekistan who has interceded on the WikiLeaks and Seth Rich issue. And I've sent those links. Those links have been posted in Geopolitics on the website. So if you go to News Trends and Stories, you'll find it. Or just go to Greg Murray's website. But one of the things he pointed out was that Tillerson was the one who really prevented the Saudis from invading Qatar. And to the massive disappointment of the Israelis. And I just think they've been gunning for him from the day he walked in, and of course he also had to deal taking over State Department with all the Hillary Clinton backbiting and sort of her and Obama staffing at the State Department. Anyway, but part of the problem was he never, I don't know, he and Trump just didn't build a rapport. So he's out, and it's too bad because he's one of the true adults in the room. I'm a fan of Tillerson, and I always get yelled at by Sager for that. Anyway, there was a rumor tonight, Washington Post published that McMaster was out, and subsequent to them posting that, Press Secretary Sarah Sanders denied it, said she had talked to McMaster and POTUS, it just wasn't true. If you look at the lower levels, very recently we've had Hope Hicks out, Rob Porter out, another one of Trump's assistants out this week on a security check background, and there's no doubt that the somebody's running a slow molasses on security checks and background checks, and then the Democrats are holding up and slowing down lots of approvals. So, you know, Trump does not have his team in place, and that's very, very frustrating. Larry Kudlow has been announced as Cohen's replacement for the chief economic advisor. Kudlow has, oddly enough, it was at my birthday party at the Rainbow Room that Kudlow first tried to persuade a whole bunch of my friends that I should go interview with Jack Kemp for a post at HUD. Anyway, but Kudlow, after he left government, went into doing TV, doing sort of being a TV economist. So he's a guy who sort of manages information flow, where Cohen was very much a deal flow and Tillerson was, you know, a real stuff flow. So if you look at the contacts and depth of the risk management that Cohen and Tillerson are experienced at, you know, it's much, much more significant and deep than Kudlow. So it's a real switch and fits with Trump being a TV guy and having somebody who's sort of in a TV model. Problem is, you know, you're sitting atop of a deal flow and a real thing flow, which is the most significant in the world. There are significant rumors regarding Sessions. It wouldn't surprise me if the neocons are going after Sessions too. So there's a real effort, you know, to unhinge Trump. Now, one of the things Trump is saying is, you know, I've been in here for a year and now I kind of know who I want and who I need. What he's saying is, you know, I treated the presidency like an entry-level position. And it's true, neither he or Tillerson had government experience, which was part of what I think caused the problem. He wants to shift Mike Pompeo, who's over at State, to CIA. Pompeo is much more neocon friendly, but Pompeo has been giving him the daily briefings, the CIA briefings, and seems to have created a much closer rapport with the president, which is what you need over at State. Senator Rand Paul came out and announced that he would impose Pompeo for State. He opposed him for CIA. And his deputy, Gina Haspel, for DCIA. And Haspel's resume is very shrouded because she spent most of her time in covert operations, so it's hard to know a lot about her because she's been at the CIA for many decades. Rand Paul was very opposed to her being the deputy, is what I believe happened. But the one thing she's known for publicly is leadership of torture, and according to former CIA employees, those were tortures where murder occurred with parties who were believed to be innocent. So she has quite a reputation on the torture issue, which has been very, the black sites all over the world have been very much an issue. If you haven't watched the Waraker trilogy, I would encourage you to do so. Anyway, the Republicans are now at 51-49, with Pence being able to do a tie vote. So with Senator Paul coming out against Pompeo and Haspel, the question is, where will the Democrats? It looks like the Democrat leadership is supportive of Haspel going to DCIA, which is kind of interesting. So it'll be interesting to see if we get any swing in the Republicans and if the Democrat leadership opposes it. Now, Trump is right. He needs people he's comfortable with. It's very hard for me to describe how horrible a position he's in. If you're the president of the United States, you're responsible for everything. But you are surrounded by people, it's like herding cats, who have their own agendas. and are really interested in toll boothing to get more power and money. Everybody's looking to, it's what the congressman said who went out to make his vote when the bell rang to call him to an appropriation. He said, let's face it, honey. I was sitting there with him at dinner and he says, let's face it, honey, I'm only here to protect my shit. But everybody's kind of, you know, what about me? What about me? And it can be horribly, horribly frustrating. One of the things I saw, I worked for a secretary who was very emotionally unstable. In fact, the White House used to call me and ask me if I'd seen, or they used to have people call me and ask me if I'd seen Kemp have any psychotic episodes. You know, so the word was kind of out about his instability. But anytime he would get wildly frustrated with he had trouble dealing with the complexity of the operation he was being asked to run. He'd been a congressman, never been responsible for operations. You know, he'd played football and he'd been a congressman. So you talk and you get a headline and then you rewrite something and you move on. You're not responsible to implement tricky, complex, and risky operations in a complex world. Anyway, so whenever he'd get frustrated, he would literally it was like a physical, emotional, demonic possession need to fire, kill, or destroy someone. It was amazing. And he'd destroy somebody, and then he'd feel good for about a week, and then he'd be out looking for somebody else to destroy. And you almost worry that the frustration and the isolation that Trump is experiencing isn't getting him to fall into that trap. Anyway, but I think it is true that he has learned a lot about what he needs in different kinds of positions. And let's see, if he reorganizes, will he get it? Now, the problem is, I think the neocons are lobbying and pushing hard and having an effect. And the problem is, you know, he's swinging in that direction. And that's why I think what Rand Paul wrote is so important. I also think he's scared. Mueller subpoenaed the Trump Organization in the Russian probe. And, you know, if they start going into his finances pre the campaign, they're going to find a lot of Russian money. And they can certainly, they're not going to find any interference on the campaign, but they can certainly make crazy with his finances if they want to. And it is way outside, in my opinion, the scope of Mueller's mandate, and for Sessions to allow this to happen, as far as I'm concerned, is malpractice. There are only three governors at the Federal Reserve. The administration is talking about taking Randall Quarles, who's also a Carlyle partner, as is the new chairman, Powell. If they're talking about appointing him to the Financial Stability Board, which is the body that oversees international financial regulation. If they do, they're only going to be the chairman and one other governor at the Federal Reserve. So for there to be only two of seven positions filled is remarkable. And again, more instability and security. There are constant rumors these days about the giant reset. You know, we're waiting for Godot. And the idea is, you know, you're going to get a giant reset of valuations. Whether it's the giant reset and the collapse of the dollar, or the giant reset, the dollar flies up because no one else can pay their dollar debts, on and on and on. There are many versions. I wouldn't hold your breath and wait for Godot. This is really, this is a every day, 365 days a year, turtle through. But there's no doubt that the global economy is likely going to have all sorts of different corrections, whether it's from trade wars. The big one is rising interest rates. You're going to have shakeouts on all sorts of people with big debt who are not going to be able to handle their debt. The other reality is we're dealing with lawlessness and corruption and just too much financial addiction to war and too much financial addiction to things which are illegal. It's funny, The Economist has just been going ballistic, attacking Trump for violating and destroying the rules-based system. But I got news for you. It was the global financial coup d'etat and the bailouts that destroyed the rule-based system. They destroyed the rule-based system a long time before Trump did. Trump just came along and just pointed out what hypocrites they are, and he's absolutely right about that. So, it's really the pot calling the kettle black, and you kind of wonder where they get their hubris. But it leaves Trump basically trying to keep a global flow model going through force. He even mentioned this week the idea of a space corps, just like the Air Force, or was it? Space Corps. I don't see how you keep a global flow model going through force. The tighter you try and control, the more it just slips through your hands. So it's a tricky position to be in, and it's a lonely position to be in. And certainly, he's a temperamental guy, but everybody's trying to make him look way more temperamental and make way more crazy than he is. What we all need to remember is my old line from one of my colleagues at HUD: in the destruction of the old, let there be the creation of the new. We just need to be building the new every day in every way. One of my other favorite quotes you've heard many times is from Leonard Cohen: there's a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in. So as things fall apart, you want to lead through the cracks. So if we don't build it, it won't happen. I had a great talk with Thomas Meyer when I was in Basel, and one of the things he talked about is how we have to find each other and build the kind of networks and leadership that can lead through these things as the change comes. But it's accelerating, so batten down the hatches. There are going to be plenty of storms. It's wild now, but it's going to get more wild.